U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming, not only for, you know, us here in the English speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here on this Friday afternoon. It is the last Friday of summer. Sort of Labor Day weekend just ahead. Andrea Haines is in the studio. We'll talk to her in just a couple of minutes. Tom Gimble, you heard his voice there. You know, we started the week talking about Andrew Luck and his big retirement announcement from Saturday into Sunday, Saturday on their term, Sunday on his. So we'll talk to Gimble about what happens when the big gun in your company cuts out. That's coming up a little bit later. Also, Dennis Rodkin in the second half hour. But we start with Andrea Haines, who is here from the Chicago Tribune. Andrea, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, so big morning this morning. I was watching you online as Mayor Lightfoot sat before the Chicago Tribune editorial board after her big address last night. What's your takeaway on it?
That's true. She is preparing us for what's to come in October, which is going to be budget news. So we're expecting more specifics then, of course. But for now, she's kind of giving a general idea of what's going to happen with an $800 million plus hole to fill in the city budget.
I was watching it online, and the thing that jumped out at me, and I know she said this before, but while she wasn't clear on a lot of specifics, she was pretty specific about the fact that there's going to be changes in the structure for rideshare companies in the city.
Yes, in terms of looking at different ways of taxing people, you know, she clearly wants to avoid a massive property tax increase. One of the things that's been discussed is variations on congestion pricing, which would have to do with, you know, driving downtown and how that would potentially be
right,
taxed.
I mean, London does that, right? I don't know if they're U.S. cities.
Yeah, some cities have really strict, you know, if you come downtown, it's a very large sort of toll on that,
right,
and
right.
That keeps congestion down. It's good for the environment, you know, that kind of thing. So there's ideas around that. But what she is lobbying out there is some more attention to rideshare companies and those rides, because that does contribute, obviously, to downtown congestion. You have a lot of single-person rides instead of actual shared rides where you're getting, hopefully, multiple people in a car.
Right.
So I think there's going to be some effort to look at that.
And also she said once those cars, and she said they're coming from the north side, once those Uber or Lyft rides come from the north side, then they're hanging out downtown, sort of idling around, waiting for the next ride, which
exactly.
If you're an Uber driver, makes perfect sense. But if you're fighting urban congestion, maybe not.
Yep.
Speaking of urban congestion, my wife and I, a week ago, last Friday, Friday afternoon, took a stroll down the Chicago Riverwalk. First time. Wow, did you know that was there?
You know, I knew it was there, but since you and I and our respective companies have moved off of Michigan
right.
Avenue, a lot has gone on down there, as close by as it is, that I've missed. And it sounds like a lot of Chicagoans don't know about it yet either.
I think it's a real tourist spot, a genuine one, but maybe not one that Chicagoans have been introduced to yet. And it's it was packed on last Friday.
Yeah, and you know, they have been working on it over the years. This was one of Rahm's efforts. It's been kind of nice to walk down there. There were a few restaurants showing up, and now there's this little mini retail district kind of just out of our view here right now over the Michigan Avenue Bridge, but it's kind of underneath the
right.
overhang down there, and so I don't know that everybody knows it's there.
I was reading, there's a story in the Tribune about it, and about how the vendors there, they're minority-owned or female-owned businesses. And they're like little pop-up stores from, well, I was going to say stores. A couple of them are stores. Most of them are restaurants from the neighborhoods. One thing Lightfoot says she wants to do, bring the neighborhoods downtown and things like that. The problem is that it's been a rough spring, rough weather for them, a late start. They're sort of, like you said, I walked by them. The names are familiar to me, but they didn't really jump out at me when I was walking by on Friday.
Yeah, the business section had a great story on this. I would recommend reading it, honestly, because there's a ton of interesting businesses down there, and they're really working out how this is going to work.
I'm sorry I walked by them, to be honest with you. Some of the food, the ethnic food they were serving from the neighborhoods, I really wish I had stopped to take it in.
Yeah, I think people should give it a look. There's, you know, they're little outposts of businesses, so in a way, the story says they're operating almost more like food trucks. It's not going to be the full restaurant experience, but they have some cool places down there. And then there also is some interesting retail, places that are offering Chicago-branded type merchandise made locally, and there seems to be a craving for that.
There's one called Neighborly that I do remember seeing. And right, and I think that's why I'm saying it's because they're doing very well. And that's because there are tourists down there and they want to buy sort of Chicago mementos. So the vendors that sort of got robbed of a full season this year, they're going to be back down there next year?
Yes, the same ones will be invited back next year. So they will have a year under their belt of kind of getting this the situation, you know, to be more known to them and how to operate it. And then they, of course, hope to grow it.
Right. And it's a lovely walk. And I feel like I'm telling something to people who already know it. And indulge me for that. But if you haven't done it, check it out. And what I was reading is that they're going to be open through almost to Halloween. So you've still got plenty of time.
Yes, there's still time. And there will probably be a few less tourists as summer passes by. Right. So now you can go check it out like a local.
And so put your parka on and enjoy the Chicago River in late October. Okay, we have talked so much about this company, Opternative. This story just jumps out at me. Now, Opternative is you could take an online reading test. And the idea is you look at your computer, you take the test, you take the results. They're reviewed by, I think, an ophthalmologist. And then you've got a prescription that you can go get your prescription filled. Well, the optometrists of the world hate it. They've been fighting it. Opternative, they changed their name not too long ago to Visibly because they didn't want to be seen as someone trying to put optometrists out of work, which Opternative seems to be. Now, Visibly, which again, I think this is a very cool thing, is being taken on by the FDA. What's going on there?
Yeah, so it took a while for sort of regulators to get on this. I know for years you and I have been talking about it. We've covered it at the Tribune, and it was kind of like, well, the FDA hasn't okayed it, but on the other hand, they haven't okayed any similar thing yet. So it was kind of like getting that all caught up. And now the FDA has said no to them running this test. So I guess time will tell how their business evolves.
So on their site now, the test is down, right? They're just, what are they selling?
Yes, yes. So they have partners with certain doctors, and they're still kind of offering that or promoting that. But okay, where they head from here, I will be interested to see.
Yeah, I just love the Opternative, I think was a great name.
Well, it's like you say, I mean, it's sort of the alternative
to the optometrist.
And needless to say, they didn't like that. So perhaps they've been a little bit humbled in terms of what their name is and what their approach may be. Now, is an online eye test, does that make sense? Is that something we may see in the future? You know,
I mean,
I have
friends who are optometrists, and there certainly is benefit to physically seeing a doctor, and they can do more than you can do online. But it seems
absolutely
to me like there's a threshold here where an online test would work as well.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, sometimes you feel like you need a little prescription tune up. You know, does it
right
work for something like that where you don't need the full visit? Again, I have to say, keep saying time will tell. But, you know, once technology exists, it doesn't often go away.
With this story, what you say is we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. Andrea Haynes from the Chicago Tribune. I don't
like
them. I just use them. We'll see you again soon. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Tom Gimbel is in the studio, the CEO and founder of the LaSalle Network. Tom, look, I'm going to really focus today because I just have trouble lately. I don't know. I'm having these mental lapses. So it's Gimbel LaSalle.
Gimbel LaSalle.
And, you know, this is WGN Radio. This is a pretty major market. I think mine is a fine radio show, and I'm a little I'm put out by the way you're dressed. What's going on?
I'm a little casual there.
You're a little casual.
I'm ready for the Cubs. I know they need me for this stretch through September to make the playoff run.
So you're going to the game
today? I'm going to go today.
What about
tomorrow? I think I'm going to go Saturday. I think I'm going to go Sunday. I think I'm going to go for a quadruple header. I'm going to go all 4 days.
What's the fourth? Monday. They're playing Monday? Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll see you there Sunday, hopefully.
Well, you know what? If I'm going, I know that you won't show up, so.
No, I'll show up. Just if you invite me, I won't show up.
I'll give you a free ticket.
All right, so let's talk sports here. That's you and I got started. And, you know, the Andrew Luck thing is, there's so many things to talk about when it comes to it. And I know it's been almost a week now, so I wanted to talk about the idea of if your superstar leaves. But before we get there, you're more in tune with this, but there was some ESPN guy who tweeted that Luck's move was the most millennial move ever.
Right, Gottlieb said that.
And then he got
Troy
beat up for that.
Troy Aikman
blasted
him.
And I didn't pay any attention to any of that. I think it was a very millennial move, but I would say it in a positive way, that millennials have different priorities.
Yes.
And, you know, he decided that this is right for me now, and I'm not going to chase the old priorities.
I think you're right. A decade ago, players would play until they couldn't move.
Right.
And you end up Jim McMahon or Ditka.
Because it's like they thought that's all they had.
That's all they had to do. And the money was different.
Okay,
right?
True. That's
making
true.
A half a million or a million is different than making 15 or 20 million.
And it's different if you're a quarterback.
Absolutely. And it's different if you have a Stanford degree versus wherever else you may be.
Right.
Right, what you have access to.
Wherever you went.
University of Colorado, go Buffs. But But so the options are different, but I would agree with you. And he did get blasted. And for somebody who wants to walk away from a career willingly, not complaining, not moaning, not right. throwing trash at anybody and saying, for me, I want to walk away, that's not a bad thing. And it's no different than somebody retiring from corporate America to go run a bed and breakfast or to move to a lower key position.
Yeah, I don't want to relitigate the whole thing. His timing was terrible. I don't know exactly what was behind that, but I was struck by the millennial part of it.
Correct.
Now, that Gottlieb guy might have not had, he probably didn't have the same point I did.
It happened in Chicago in a not different industry. So we're in media right now. Mark Sapelsa retired.
Yeah.
Right? Literally probably the top of his game for what he was making, moved out to Montana and that whole deal.
He was slipping.
But whatever was going on behind the scenes, no one knows what's going on with Andrew Luck or Sapelsa, but he walked away. And people are like, why would you do that? Well, there must be more to the story. Sometimes there isn't more to the story. Sometimes somebody just doesn't want to go through the grind anymore.
So let's bring that to the corporate world.
Yep.
You work at LaSalle Network.
Yep.
So what happens when the companies you work with lose their star player?
That is called succession planning. And in corporate America, it's do managers and leaders, whether you're the CEO or division director or whatever you may be, do they have the next level of people lined up who can step in? They may not have the experience, probably don't. They may not have the gravitas, probably don't. But are they being groomed? Are they being taught the things necessary to step up?
And when it comes to football, I would imagine the replacement quarterbacks is certainly not at Andrew Luck level, but that position more than any, they would have had their eyes on succession.
Yeah, well,
not that he's ready, but I mean,
they could have happened any week. Listen, Andrew Luck has had a series of injuries, missed a whole year 2 years ago, and they traded the Patriots for their backup quarterback. So they were getting people in place who have as close to an ability as you can have in a second round, a backup quarterback. And every team, company, team, enterprise has to have somebody who can step into that role.
Okay, so let's flip it then, and let's say what happens when your star's been gone and he comes back, Ben Zobrist.
So that I think what ends up happening is do you lose your position from being injured, and what positive boost can you give you? It really depends how long someone's gone, because the dynamic of the team changes.
Right.
And this happens in very close-knit teams. A sales team, a marketing team, a baseball team. When you have players that feed off each other's energy, and having Zobrist, you know, who knows, right? We're not, neither one of us are Theo or Joe, but it comes back as he could be a huge boost and get a hit at the right time. He could also be a distraction.
And so, but if you're in the office and you've got someone coming back after a leave for one reason or another, and you've stepped up, the manager, you've got to take care of the people who've stepped up and filled in too.
The manager has to do, so this is where communication is key. And this is what defines a leader. Does the manager, does the director, does the vice president, do they go in and say, this is why we're doing it. We believe this is what's best. I know it's not fair today. In the long run, we'll all benefit.
Right. It's the whole Wally Pipp thing in a way, but in the office, you've got to communicate in a way that people know they're still valued.
You can't expect people to get it. If everybody got it, there wouldn't be a need for managers.
So what we really talk about every week is communication.
Oh, it always comes down to communication.
And this is just another version of that.
Emotional intelligence, whether you're playing baseball or running a sales team, you need to have it.
Our big 3-4-game series.
Huge.
They've just won 3 in a row.
Yep.
You feeling good?
I feel fantastic for this Cubs team. We're going to hit this thing. We're going to sweep the Brewers. We are going to go out of the Labor Day weekend being 1 game ahead. Cardinals are going to lose this weekend. Big things coming for Chicago
Cubs. It's exciting, but I'll be watching the White Sox and Braves tonight, okay? So you can do whatever you want.
Who are they?
Tom Gimbel, LaSalle Network. Thanks for coming by.
Always good to see you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Dennis Rutkin is in the studio, writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business, and joins us from time to time. Dennis, welcome back.
Hi, Steve.
Okay, so I have a choice here. It's Friday. We could go for the housing numbers.
Which are sad.
Don't want to do that. Or we can go and look inside people's windows, which is always much more fun when you're here.
Are we going to do that live? Or are we actually going to go?
We're going to do it.
Take a tour bus.
We're going to do it via ChicagoBusiness.com and Cranes. And I want to start because you know I love the stories behind buildings.
Yeah.
And you write a story about a home in Glencoe that sold for nearly $10 million, and it was a teardown, right? A rebuilt home. But I love the story of the originator of the building.
The old home, the home that this house replaced. So this one sold for about $9.8 million. It's right on the water at the end of Wentworth in Glencoe. It replaced, just about 6 years ago, a house that had several iterations, started in the 19th century as a farmhouse, uh-huh. and then was added to by the McLeish family, who were the top executives at Carson, Perry, and Scott, father and son. The son is the one who owned this, and was also, McLeish was also the grandfather of
Bruce
the movie
Dern,
star Bruce Dern. Yeah.
I think that's fascinating. So the guy who ran Carson Perry Scott, he is the grandfather of Bruce Dern and the great-grandfather
right.
of Laura Dern.
Yeah, and then his own father also ran Carson's, also was a partner in Carson's before him, and had a different estate in Glencoe. So this house, the house that has been torn down, it almost looked like something out of Gone with the Wind. I'd shot video there years ago. It faced south, and it had these huge 2.5-story pillars and a big porch with, it was white and black shutters, and it really looked like some southern house.
Right.
But on the lakefront in Glencoe, or on the lake bluff, I should say, in Glencoe, I think it's about 50 feet above the water. That was torn down by the people who just sold. They bought it in about 2012. And they built a house that looks like something out of the Hamptons. It's, you know, it's shingled and it's got the white trim, far larger than the house that was there, far more contemporary, but I don't mean like slick architecture.
Sure, sure, right.
Something from today. And it's a very pretty
cabinet,
house.
No cherry cabinets.
No cherry cabinets, right. You're always feared cherry cabinets. It's a very nice house. The history on the site is no longer there with
right.
the old house being gone.
Okay, so I'm picturing you because you write in the story that a Cranes reporter was unable to see if the funicular going down to the lake
right.
from the bluff was still. So that's you.
That's me.
And so I'm just picturing, do you get out of your car and like walk up and down the street, or how do you do that reporting?
Do we have to say on the air?
I didn't want to know.
I do it by bike because I'm less noticeable on bike.
When I was thinking, like, well, they've got to be saying, who's that guy walking around the house?
I have had, how many of my secrets do we have to give away today,
We don't
Steve?
Have to give them all away.
This one, let's talk about the funicular. A funicular is an elevator
but
or a cable car.
It's like you're a restaurant critic or something.
Exactly. Yeah, my name isn't actually Dennis Rodkin.
No.
A funicular is a lift or an elevator.
You chose a handsome guy for your fake picture, though, by the way.
I did. It's a picture of you, Steve.
Okay, the funicular.
The funicular is essentially a little cable car or a little lift that goes down the bluff. There aren't that many on the North Shore. There are other houses that have them. And when the previous owners were there, I actually got to shoot video where we rode that funicular down. It's a great way to approach your private beach on the North Shore.
Right.
I don't know whether that's still there. I don't have any reason to believe they would take it out. It's just that I couldn't see it from the street.
I don't want to tell you how to do your job, but if you had a paddleboard, a stand-up paddleboard, you can go up and down the lakefront and look at people's houses that way.
Why, I do have a kayak. I should have done that.
Well, you know, just an idea for the next time.
Falling down on the job again.
It won't help you in Mundelein, but there's another big high-profile property for sale in Mundelein.
Joe Walsh's house was for sale. It came off the market right after he declared his presidential candidacy.
So if Joe Walsh wants to move to Washington, why is the owner of the house no longer selling it? Because presumably he's going to move.
No idea. Nobody would comment. I tweeted at him. I called the real estate broker. I don't know why it came off the market. It had been on the market since late June. Joe Walsh, at the time, was a talk radio host. His wife, Helene Miller Walsh, is a former member of the state legislature. And they've been living there for a few years. And then, again, as I said, it came on the market in June. And then Sunday, he declares for president. Monday, he reports that he's lost his radio show in the wake of declaring for president. And Tuesday, the house comes on the market. So I don't think it's a coincidence, but because nobody would comment, I don't know exactly why
it
happened.
So it's not a coincidence, but it's sort of hard to line up exactly how the details would have happened.
I don't think they've started packing for the White House yet.
Right. Measuring the blinds?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think that would be the case. Okay, from there to Burr Ridge and Fred Hoiberg, who, oh, come on, I know of a little bit of Fred. This is a very ostentatious house that, that Fred Hoiberg, the former Bulls coach, lived in.
Out of character?
Well, I mean, I don't know him personally. We used to travel in the same circles a little bit, and I just was surprised to see this.
Well, I don't know, because, of course, I don't know him. I don't travel in the circles you do, Steve.
Please.
But, it was, it's a very nice house. It was built, it was under construction when they came along and then sort of tailored to their specifications. It's a really nice house in Burr Ridge, mansard roofs, and it's that C shape.
It looks like a French estate, a chateau sort of.
Right, so you would drive up into the middle of the C. I'm saying the letter C, not right. like an ocean. And it's very sort of baronial on the outside. And then it is actually quite contemporary on the inside. It's pretty sleek. I think I said in the story that it's nearly all white, which starts to be a little blinding. There are some accents, but it's mostly this sort of white interior, big kitchen. I don't know Hoiberg, so I don't know if it's out of character.
Look, I didn't mean to imply that I do. I just, whatever.
Because the phones are lighting up. Yeah, he's calling saying, who's that guy, Bertrand? Sorry.
It's only fair you did that because I put you on a kayak in Lake Michigan. So now we're even. but the story is he's selling it at a pretty substantial 10% loss?
Sold it at a 10% loss. Yeah. So, you know, we talk about this a lot. I've been tracking a lot of these primarily suburban, though some in the city, mansions especially, but houses that sell at below old prices. Generally, those are prices from before the big housing boom. So I'm selling in 2019 for a 2000 price or something like that. That's not quite the case here because Hoiberg just bought it in 2015. And if you're selling 4 years later, you're pretty likely to lose money.
Right.
But he lost 10%. I think had he, I said you're pretty likely to lose money, but had he been the coach in Seattle or Houston or Austin in that same period, he would not be selling at a loss 4 years later. This is what's happening with our suburban mansions and is not happening as much in these other cities.
Well, but it's nice he can afford it. He was getting paid $5 million a year to coach the Bulls, $2.5 million now to coach Nebraska. So, and he's still getting paid from the Bulls, even though he took the Nebraska job. So
he could take this loss.
Good for you, Fred Hoiberg.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Car cams these days are very common, and the small investment can save drivers tons of money with insurance companies later on when they go down the whodunit road. He pulled out in front of me! No, he made an illegal left turn! Let's check the tape. Oh boy! Now the same reassurance will be had by truck drivers after Chicago-based Smart Witness raised $4 million to further develop their cameras in semi-trucks. These cameras will be a little bit more proactive in playing a role to prevent accidents, giving drivers visibility of bad spots, but they'll also be used in insurance cases as well. That's for sure. What's also for sure is the crummy season farmers have been having. A new survey that was released at the Farm Progress Show right here in Illinois detailed that 53% of 711 farmers believe 2019 was one of the worst years for farming they've ever experienced. That includes the 1980 farm crisis many of these farmers experienced firsthand. Guys, this is our food we're talking about. You know, the stuff we eat to keep us alive. Yeah. It's important. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WG, and Dennis Rotkin is in the studio. He writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. Okay, my favorite story, because these things fascinate me, these neighborhoods that have airstrips behind them.
Yeah.
That you can fly into. And you write about one in Downers Grove, which is sort of becoming a trend of older rich people downsizing.
Yeah.
So they're building smaller houses, but with their own runway and hangar.
I love this. I got such a kick out of this when I first heard about it. So we have several subdivisions in the Chicago suburbs that were built around private airstrips. So I'm a small plane pilot. This is not for your Gulfstream jet. This is for a much smaller plane. And I want to live with it, in part because I work on the plane. You know, I tinker under the hood, that sort of thing.
And why not have it close?
So this subdivision called Brookridge is actually the first one that started in the Chicago area back in 1956. It was, and there were others built in Monee and Naperville and a few other places.
Okay, I'm just going to list those because you say Naperville, Monee, Hampshire, and Poplar Grove.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there may have been others that started. Those are the ones that still exist. This was the first. And the idea is you live around this aircraft runway. some of the houses actually are on runways or taxiways and have hangars for garages. So I would have a little ordinary garage for my car and then something twice as tall and twice as wide for my airplane.
Well, that's the way I kind of pictured these places, like you would pull into your house. But then you write about many of these homes have acreage with them, too. So they're not all adjacent to the runway.
They're all adjacent. Those that have hangars are all adjacent to taxiways. Okay. So you can go right out of your hangar and get right to the runway. They're, not many are on a lot of acreage. They're on two or something like that. But the idea is, over time, what has happened is a lot of people have built these very big houses with the hangar. So I'm living in 8,000 square feet, 10,000 square feet with my aircraft in the garage. But now I'm an empty nester. I don't need an 8,000 square foot house, but I still need a place to put the plane.
So your hangars that can't get any smaller, but your house can get smaller.
But your exactly. So there is a developer who they all live. The people involved in this project live in the neighborhood. There is a piece of land that, even though this subdivision started in the 1950s, has never been developed. It's a few acres. It has an old hangar, or had an old hangar on it. That hangar has been renovated. It was owned for many years by a man who used it to sort of mess around with his planes, so it's just sort of undeveloped. And these people have figured out, well, what a lot of people want now is, I don't need as much living space, but I still need as much hangar space. So they are building 2,500 square foot houses with 3,500 square foot hangars, as opposed to, as I said, about 8,000 square feet of living space and a 3,500 square foot hangar. I'll have less house than I have hangar.
And they're building these on spec, right?
Yeah, they it appears to me that there will be demand. Right. There are a couple of people in the subdivision who have said, yeah, I would do that. I have this big house and I don't need it. I would move into a smaller house if I had a place to put my plane.
I've just always been fascinated by those neighborhoods where you have your own airport. It just seems such a wild, unusual way to live.
And this one, when you wander around, it's sort of interesting because, so the neighborhood is about 200 houses. There are only about 84 on the runways. But as you drive through the streets, just like you'd see a sign that says, you know, drive as if your kids live here or children crossing, there are signs on these little suburban roads that say low-flying planes.
Wow.
And you actually drive the street, crisscrosses the runway and things like that.
Please tell me they don't have kitschy names like Kitty Hawk and Wilbur Drive and things like that.
In this one, they don't. In some of them, they do.
Dennis Rodkin, read more from him at Crane Chicago Business, chicagobusiness.com. Thanks for coming by, friend.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.